and welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on the Facebook. You can like us, The Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook, like us. I am joined today by my special guest co-host, Tracy Pendergast.
Thank you for having me.
You can follow her on Twitter.
It's at Tracy Pendergast.
At Tracy Pendergast. You can also like her page on Facebook as well. And our guest today is one of my favorite character actors. And he has done a lot of roles that I've really enjoyed his work in. Of course, you know him from Sopranos as Junior's lawyer, and you've seen him in Seven, and you've seen him in Tin Men and Private Parts and Twins and Kindergarten Cop. And I want to introduce Richard Portnow, and of course, one of my favorite films of all time, and it's one of my favorite books as well, is Private Parts. And my question to you is, has Howard's father, because you play Ben Stern, has Howard's father ever said anything to you about the role?
No, he didn't. But I went out to New York a week before we started filming in order to meet his father and study him. And I went out there to the house, I think, in Long Island. And I met his mom and I met his dad. And we sat around and talked for about 2 hours.
Wow.
It was very helpful.
That's great. That's great. Did Howard say anything to you about you playing his father?
Subsequently, after the fact. apparently he still raves about my performance as his dad. He talks a lot about it, you know.
That's great.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
That's really good. What happens when you do a film as big as Private Parts? Like, what subsequently happens? That movie comes out. You're doing the Howard Stern project. Are you getting a lot of offers then? Are you getting more meetings?
Absolutely. When you're in a high-profile picture or a TV show that's a hit, everybody wants you to play on their team.
Yeah.
And it's also easier to sell an actor when he's in something that's highly recognizable, when he can be identified, you know. He plays Howard Stern's father. Oh, that guy. Yeah, have him in. Let's go.
Yeah. And did you enjoy working with Howard?
Yeah.
Someone who hadn't acted before?
I liked him. I liked
him
a lot.
Was he humble and everything since
it
was his first role?
He was very humble, very hard worker. He would show up to the set from the radio show, so he wouldn't have gotten any sleep. And they had to set up those police barricades.
Wow.
Because the crowds would show up 2 hours before the call.
Wow.
If we were called for 7 a.m., the crowds would start showing up at 5. And the police barricades were up to keep them kind of at bay. And Howard would show up, and he would work the crowd for a while, sign autographs and talk to people. And, you know, this was a guy that had just finished an 8-hour on-the-air radio show and was going to work for 12 hours in front of the camera.
Well, it's funny because you've met Howard, Tracy. That was like your big break. You did Howard.
Yeah.
That was a big deal, don't you think?
Yeah.
You think so?
It was, yeah.
Because you were Miss Howard she was Miss Howard on Howard's show at one point. Yeah. What was that like, Tracy, doing it? Remind our viewers, you doing as a Miss Howard.
It was terrifying. It's surreal. You know, you walk into this like chamber and all of these recognizable faces are in the room and you're in there, you feel like you're in a dream, and then you walk out, the door closes, you never see them again, and you're like, what just happened?
Plus, you were pretty not too dressed for the occasion.
No.
Does that make you nervous?
People have been a lot worse on that show.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It was definitely out of my comfort zone.
We'll call it the swimsuit look you were on.
Yeah,
a two-piece?
Yeah, I was in a bikini bottoms and a tank top, a Howard TV
See,
tank
that's
top.
Where I'd be nervous.
I wore a posing strap.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Richard and I wear our bikini bottoms and a tank top,
we stop traffic.
Well, it is scary because you're afraid, like, what if he makes fun of me? What if he calls me, like, a fat ass? You know,
Did you get to meet Howard after?
No. You literally, you're like chauffeured in and you're pulled out and then you never, that's it.
Really?
Yeah.
Howard just
really
doesn't want to. See, I just hear Howard does his show in a way where he wants to have like no outside connection to anything going on with the show. Like he already knows Fred, but they don't hang out all the time or anything. They maybe hang out outside the show a few times a year. Robin, they hang out here and there. But he doesn't want to like the show to be his outside life, too. He wants to remain objective on the show, which I totally don't do. since Lee and I live together. We're not objective. So, Richard, you do Private Parts. Around the same time, you got Seven. Now, tell me about working for David Fincher and working on that film.
Fincher, very, very good director. I didn't try out for that movie. They offered it to me. And
did they tell you why they offered it to you?
Because they thought I was probably the best living actor in the world.
That's true. But do they go, when they offer you something, I've always wondered about this because I feel this way. When you offer someone something, do you go, I saw your work and blah, 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 and
sometimes,
I thought you were great?
Sometimes. When I did that movie, Father of the Bride, the director, Nancy Myers, told me that she had seen a clip of my work in the movie Twins with Danny DeVito.
Great movie.
In that film, I play I buy the stolen cars from Danny.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a slimy guy. And she said, when I saw that movie and I saw your performance, I said, that's the guy I want for the tuxedo salesman in Father of the Bride.
Man, we get a lot of Nancy Myers references on this show, by the way. Yeah, we do. Because Steve Terrell, who was in that movie as well and did the soundtrack for it, he was on the show. We were talking about Nancy for a while. As a tuxedo guy, it's great because you sell Steve Martin the faux pas, like the faux Armani.
No, he asks me, he says, are you sure this is black, Al? It looks blue. No. The buttons are black. If the buttons are black, the tuxedo is black. Armani doesn't make a blue tuxedo. And he goes to the wedding, and Martin Short says, why are you wearing the blue?
So good.
Yeah, so you do Seven, though, and they just cast you. They just want you. They want you. Now, Fincher's known for being very meticulous, doing like a million shots, a million takes of one shot.
The scene that I did, I play opposite Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of them.
No.
A couple of actors, they were very nervous about working with me, but I told them to relax, calm down, I'm going to help you as much as I can.
That was kind.
So it was what they call a one-er, which means there's only one angle. It was a tracking shot. They had the camera on a dolly, and they followed us down the corridor of the hospital. And we did at least 12 takes, and for each take, he added something, took something away. He said, that was great. Okay, now give me a little more edge. Great, that was great. Now take away a little bit of what you gave me, but add this and take that away. Every single take, he adjusted. And I loved working that way. Ultimately, I hated the take he took and used. But, the guy's, he's a really good director. I think his work is terrific.
I just remember reading Gyllenhaal had a really rough time with him, and Jake Gyllenhaal didn't want to work with him again because he would do like 100 takes of one scene. And Jake's like, I think I nailed it at like 7. You know, like, I don't need to do 100. And he doesn't get that, like, David's way is David's way.
What did they do together?
Zodiac.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, sometimes a director will have an actor do it over and over and over without saying anything.
Yeah.
And they're doing that in order to wear the actor down so that by take 22, the actor's no longer acting.
Yeah.
He's just letting it go.
Yeah.
Which is what they're after. They don't want any acting. You don't want to see the acting. You know, you just want it to be.
Yeah.
You know.
So is your big break for you, Richard, though, playing Psy in Radio Days?
Yes. That was a big break, right?
That was
a big break. Exactly.
And you get to work with Woody.
Got to work with Woody.
How amazing is that experience?
No comment. No, I've got a lot to say about Woody Allen.
Oh, well, then say it all.
All right. First of all, I was told by my agent that I was going to go in and it was going to be very, very brief. I would not be reading. In other words, I wouldn't be auditioning with the lines. I would be meeting him, and it would be very quick, and they'd take my photograph, and that would be it. So I said, okay, fine, great. And I went in, and the casting director said, Woody Allen, Richard Portnow. And he said, we're doing a movie in February. And, you know, clever me, I said, I'm available. But what happened was I turned to see where the couch or chair was placed so that I wouldn't miss the edge when I sat down. You know, you want to make sure you sit in the seat. So I turned away from him, and there was no couch or chair there. And when I turned back, he said, "So thank you." That was it. And I went outside, and they took a Polaroid, and 6 months later, no, 2 months later, I was told that I had 6 weeks on the film.
Wow.
But it was basically, we're doing a movie, and we wanted to see you and meet you.
So for the 2 months you're waiting to hear, you figure you didn't get it.
Because
that meeting was like 5 seconds long.
Yeah, maybe, you know, 15 seconds, literally a 15-second meeting. Yeah.
Why did I look for the couch?
So you end up doing Radio Days. What was it like on set with Woody? What's that experience like with him as a director and you as an actor?
In the casting room, there were two other people present besides the casting director. Actually, she left. She ushered me in, introduced us, and left. There were two other people, a man and a woman. The woman was Susan Morse, his editor, and the man was Jeffrey Kurland, his costume designer. For some reason, they were in on the casting process. And after I got the part, I went for real screen tests of makeup and hair and costume. And Jeff Kurland said to me, "Okay, do yourself a favor. Don't ask him any questions. He doesn't like questions."
Oh, God.
And you don't get the entire script unless you're in the entire script. You get the pages that you're on. So I only saw 7 pages of this movie script. I didn't see any more than that. Consequently, when I hit the set for my first scene, I really didn't know what anyone else had said about me prior to my entrance or after I leave. I had no idea. I just saw what I was in. So I naturally don't ask them any questions right away. I asked them questions.
Can I get a little backstory?
I asked them, "What do you want to see here, Woody? I could give you any color that you're interested in. You know, I could make him a cad or a nice guy or a guy with a secret. You know what?" He said, "Do what you're doing. Do what you're doing. And when we get to the big part of the scene, then I'll nitpick." So the big part of the scene happened 6 weeks later. I'm walking down the street with Diane Weist at the end of our date, and we have dialogue. And he said to me, "Be more affectionate with her." That was it. That's all he ever said. So I put my arm around him.
That's the only direction he ever gave. The
only thing he ever said was be more affectionate with her. And then 10 years after that, I got an offer to do Everybody Says I Love You.
Yeah.
And I went to New York to do that. And I was no longer green. You know, Radio Days was really the first film I ever did. By the time I did Everybody Says I Love You, I had done quite a few films, and I knew my way around a set. And I thought maybe I knew a little bit about acting. And they paired me up with Tracy Ullman, detestable woman.
Really?
Oh, I don't like her at all. And why you can print that.
Why not? Well, why not?
Oh, she thinks who she is. Come on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't go for that.
Poor Tracy.
You know? I don't go for that, you know.
So she is... You get that feeling about her, though, watching. She's really in Tracy Ullman.
Tracy Ullman, that's who it's all about, you know. And I kind of overheard her asking, in the makeup trailer, asking the makeup people, "Well, who is he?"
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So I don't intend to work with her again.
You know, no projects with you and Tracy.
Tracy and I, we're a thing of the past.
So how do you work with her in this scene? How is an actor when you already don't like somebody? You have to be a good actor.
That's where the acting comes in. That's where the craft comes in.
So what happens here, though?
You make believe. You know,
so you guys get together, and how do you do this scene?
I pretend that I like her, you know. Yeah. It's make believe. Acting is make believe.
Did she at least compliment your work?
No.
That is so funny.
No. That's great, Tracy.
So Woody really didn't say anything on that
point. Well, he loves Tracy.
Yeah, he does. He loves Tracy. And, you know, subsequent to that, in 2003, I did a play for Woody Allen. I've worked with the guy 3 times. And, the third time was.
I'm
a play
surprised that, you weren't in Bullets Over Broadway. That has you
that
written
made
all
sense,
over,
right? That
yeah.
would have made a lot of sense. Chaz Palminteri got that part.
Fuck.
Oh, no. Excuse me. Sorry, I didn't mean to use that word.
It's all right. Fuck's fine.
Fuck yeah, man. Chaz commentary. Chaz this, all right? Now, Chaz is a good guy.
He is. He's great.
He's a good guy. I like Chaz. I always have. I always will.
We love Chaz. He's been on the show. He's great.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Great.
My hand to God. We love saying that. Matthew, my hand to God. Forget about it.
So what's the play you did for Woody in 2003?
The play was called Writer's Block. We did it at the Atlantic Theater Company. I had to fly into audition on my own dime. Everybody in New York was after that play because the play was done during upfronts. Upfronts are when the networks announce what shows they're picking up. The pilots that are going to be picked up and turned into series. And that's when the play was being done. I turned down a recurring character on a new pilot. I turned down Spider-Man 2 or 3 or one of those. Small part, figuring that, well...
Sam Raimi is one of the investors in the restaurant.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Far out.
Yeah, isn't that wild? So you almost
could
work
with
Sam, but you decided I'm gonna be loyal to Woody.
Yep.
I'm gonna make a play with Woody.
Yep.
And how did that go?
It was not very much fun, really.
No.
I don't know.
Who else was in the play?
We had B.B. Newworth.
Love B.B.
Grant Shawd.
Yep.
Jay Thomas.
Okay.
The radio guy.
That's interesting.
Jay
that
Thomas.
Jay was in this play. Okay.
Paul Reiser.
Oh wow.
Skip Suddeth. And there were some others.
It's quite the cast.
Yeah, we had a good cast. But
how long did it run for?
We were contracted to do 60 performances. It was a limited run. We could have extended, but we all said, well, if you want us to extend, you're going to have to pay us.
And right.
They were giving us a pittance. And they didn't want to pay. So we said, well, sorry, you know, you're selling out every night.
Really?
You're selling out every night. You can give us a couple of dollars.
I'm sure Woody makes a couple bucks off those plays.
A couple of bucks. But I don't know. I really don't do too much theater anymore. You know, I've been seduced by the camera.
Pays better, I
camera
hear.
Pays. And I find it more exciting.
Yeah.
Also, you know, when you're working with a net, you get used to it.
Yeah.
When you're on stage, there's no net.
No.
So when I do a play now... I have incredible anxiety about whether or not I'm going to remember the lines.
Just now that's happened.
That's started happening back in 2003. Actually, no, 2002. I've never gone up. They call that going up or going dry. I've never gone up, ever. But the anxiety exists because the muscle has become somewhat flaccid for that type of venue.
Yeah,
you know, when that's
know
all
you
do,
yeah.
when all you do is theater, you don't think about the lines, ever.
Yeah.
But when you don't, then you start to become anxious. You know?
Is there more pressure, though, when you've become this big character actor? Is there more pressure than there was when you started out? Because I know from doing plays in Second City and stuff, I don't really care... I don't really care about screwing up because, you know, I'm just going to be me and who cares? It's for nothing. But then you're a big character actor. Does that come into play and put on a little pressure that you need to kill this performance? You need to kill this one. You put a lot of stress on yourself?
Well, I always try to bring my best game.
Sure.
I never take it for granted.
Well,
I always do my homework. I'm always prepared. But... having been around as long as I have and worked as much as I have, it actually makes things a lot easier because I never hit a set on which I don't know at least half a dozen people in the crew. I always know people in the crew because I've worked with them on something in the past, and that just makes for an easier day.
Yeah.
Because they right away, oh, this guy, he knows what he's doing. We don't have to worry about him. And it... reduces the tension a little bit. Like, will he be able to deliver this? They know I can, so the pressure is off somewhat.
That's good. That's good. I mean, you've worked with everybody and done everything now. When did you start in the business? Like, what was the year? Do you remember? Because if Radio Days was 84, that's your first big break.
Radio Days was 85, I think.
I mean,
or 86, January of 86. I started 10 years before that.
Yeah.
Doing theater and TV commercials.
Right.
It was tough for me to get an agent. I didn't break through right away.
When did you get your agent?
I got my agent in 84 and then started working by 85.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It was tough getting an agent. It took me 10 years to get an agent for film and TV. Nobody wanted me. Now, I couldn't even get a bad agent.
Hard.
I'm telling you, it was terrible.
Wow. Then, it is hard. Because, you know.
It's a tough racket.
The big places aren't taking new people. And the old places, they're not going to work hard for you. And
or they sign you, you get really excited, and then they never call you ever.
I was gonna say, because, Trace, you've had a couple agents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, without naming names, if you don't want to.
Oh, name names.
But explain to our listeners what a bad agency experience is like.
Well, they just don't call you. Or they send you out for the wrong stuff. Like, send me out for a mom of three. And I get there, and I'm like, everyone's looking at me like I'm crazy. Or they send me for, you know, Gossip Girl, and I'm the oldest person in the room, and everyone's looking at you. I mean, maybe I think you just have to be paired with someone that really understands you, right? And believes in you and your type.
What was your worst audition experience, Richard?
Oh gosh, there's been so many. This is great. It was before I really started working. Back in New York, I tried out for a musical, for a theater piece, and I believe it was called Your Own Thing. And I really am not a singer, but somehow I got this audition, and I went in, and I sang If I Had a Hammer. And I sang it like such an insipid loser. If I had a hammer, hang in the morning. And I'm muddling my way through this song. Inept, no confidence, loser written all over me from the back of the house, from this dark house, because it was in the theater and I was on the stage. House was dark. From the back of the house, I hear what was, it turned out to be, the director's voice going, "Why are you wasting my time?"
Wonderful song selection, though, I have to say.
So that I would say that was my worst
one.
That was my worst one.
Reminds me of Temple Camp.
Did anything come of that director?
Donald Driver was his name. The show was a hit.
Yeah?
Actually, yeah, the show was a hit. It was, I think, about hippies, as I recall. A long time ago.
Being so busy and you're always working, so you're going to have to turn down some jobs.
I turn down stuff, yeah.
Do you? Is there anything that you really kick yourself for having to pass on or deciding to pass on?
At this point, I don't think that there is anything that I'm kicking myself about. No. I think things have worked out pretty good,
That's awesome.
Basically, when I turn something down, it's because I don't really believe in the project.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes because I insist at this stage in the game on some creature comfort when I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're on set, they can put you in a honey wagon, which are small compartments with very little room. You really can't lay down. It's got a sink, a toilet, and half a couch. Or they'll put you in what's known as a two-banger or a three-banger, also known as star wagons, and those are self-contained, and they're very comfortable, or a motorhome. It spirals up, and I won't work without a two-banger, because between shots, I want to relax, you know?
Yeah.
I want to stretch out sometimes, or just... be by myself in the quiet and put some classical music on. And these two bangers are all set up for that. You know, they have DVD players and CD players. So I have turned down jobs that couldn't afford a honey wagon. And I've told my agents, that's a line we do not cross. No two banger, no Richard Portnow. And I'm not being conceited or trying to be a jerk about it. There's a reason for my demand, you know.
Yeah.
So,
Matt and I will stand in trash cans in the middle.
Yeah, I don't have any. I mean, I'd like my trailer to be a certain size, but I hear they cut back on those even nowadays.
Yeah. They cut back on everything.
Yeah.
Recently, Screen Actors Guild accepted business class flights for their actors. It used to be first class only, and they rolled back on that.
Wow.
So
now if you really want to work and they really want to be cheap, they'll tell you business class.
Business class, which ain't bad.
No, right.
Believe me,
right.
It's not bad. But, you know.
That's wild that there was ever anything in the SAG contract, though, that said first class for the actors.
Yeah. Good union.
Yeah, I was going to say. What's going on with the SAG-AFTRA thing? Do you know anything about it? Any insight on it?
Well,
do you care?
I don't want to talk about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a bad issue?
Bad issue to talk about.
Because people are really torn on that issue.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
but, you know, there was something I wanted to tell Tracy.
Yes.
When you find yourself going up for a part and you feel, well, this is all wrong for me, understand that the casting director has seen your photo.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that there's a possibility for you. You would not be there unless there was a possibility. Maybe they don't want to go with a woman that looks old enough to have three kids.
Right.
You know, they have already seen you, looked at your resume, looked at your photo, and said, okay, send her in. Just to know that, you know, because you'll read a script sometimes and your audition will be for the part of, in the script, the guy's described for me, 75 years old with a full head of white hair.
Right.
Well, that's not me. Obviously, they're not married to that, you know. That's what was written originally in the screenplay. But if they're seeing me, they know what I look like. So they're thinking, well, you know, this might be a better way to go.
That's really good advice.
You know,
here's my advice, Tracy. If they're giving you a shot to work, who cares?
Oh, trust me, I never complain. I go and try my hardest.
That's me. When someone's like, Matt, do you want to act? And yes. Yes. Yes, I do.
Also, one of the things I would recommend, this is some of the stuff. I used to teach more than an acting class. It was a strategy class, and I would teach what you needed besides acting ability to work successfully in the business, to get over. And one of the things I would tell my students is that you never get, and this was a line from a commercial years ago for toothpaste, you never get a second chance to make a good first impression. Now, if your agent gives you an audition and you look at the material and you cannot find the character, it is evading you, and you don't know what the hell to do with this material,
Yeah. Don't
go in.
Really?
Oh, really?
You can hurt yourself. You go in and give a rotten audition, they'll remember that.
Really?
Oh, no,
of course.
So
how do you get out of an audition?
This is how you get out of it. You tell the agent, and it's hard to do when you haven't gotten many appointments yet, but there is one phrase that I came up with that an agent can't really argue with. I don't respond to the material.
Hmm.
That's subjective, right? Mm-hmm. What are they going to say? Why not? I wish I could tell you why not. It's not there for me. I don't respond to this material, you know? No.
Yeah.
I'd love to work on this show, but not in this part.
It hasn't cost you anything. And
well, yeah, you know.
Do they keep asking you to come into that office, though?
Well, you know, let me tell you something. I went in for a part that I did not respond to. And I told my agents, no, I don't want to go in on this. And they insisted. They said, the show's great. It's a great pilot. It's going to be a hit. I said, you're right. It is a great pilot. And it is going to be a hit. But not with me. And they insisted. Now, when an actor has to go in and try something out,
yeah,
he'll come up with, okay, well, if I do it this way, that can be funny. He'll make arbitrary choices, all right? Not organic choices. An arbitrary choice is transparent, and it will deflate in front of your auditors, in front of the people that are you're auditioning for. And that's what happened. I went in. And I didn't believe in the choices. I was trying to pull choices out of thin air when I was rehearsing at home. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, if I do it that way, it might be funny. Sorry. I didn't commit to them because they really weren't grounded. They weren't organic. And I failed miserably. I hate to say this, especially on the air, but I was real bad. And not only did I not get the part, which I knew I wouldn't get, but this particular casting director had another pilot that he told my agents he was going to be bringing me in for. Well, that never transpired.
Oh.
So I shot myself in the foot with this casting director and with the producers that were in that room because I didn't stick to my guns and say, no, man, this one is not me.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
It's tough to say no.
I think it's all worked out.
Huh?
I think it's all worked out
for you. It's worked out.
I mean, another film you worked on, another great director. I mean, just the list of directors, Cameron Crowe.
Cameron.
You did Say Anything.
Yeah, I did Say Anything. And, you know, I didn't finish all my work in that film.
Really?
Yes. They went over, okay, and I had gotten a TV pilot. That was my first season out here, and I got a TV pilot, and the producer of the pilot, Ed Weinberger, spoke to James Burrows.
Yeah.
And got me out of the film to do the pilot. Because when you watch the movie, you will see that there is a different IRS man at the end of the film.
Yeah.
That was me. That should have been me.
Oh, but they took you, they
but
took you out.
But I got out early, so they replaced me with that actor, whose name I am blanking on now. He's a three-name guy. So
he's either an actor or a serial killer. One of the two. But you got to work with John Mahoney, but also Cameron Crowe. What was it like working with Cameron?
He was cool.
Yeah.
Laid back. Very
right?
cool guy.
Yeah.
I liked him.
Yeah.
That was his first film, I think. Was it? No. Maybe his second film.
It was one of the two.
Yeah.
It was, I want to say Singles was after it. So
yes, it was.
Say Anything, I think, was first. But
it's a great film.
Yeah. It's a great film.
It's a classic.
Yeah, yeah. But then you talked about earlier you worked on Twins, and you and DeVito have a great scene together.
Yeah.
Ivan Reitman brings you back for Kindergarten Cop.
Yes, he does.
So Ivan must be a fan.
Ivan is a fan. Ivan is a fan. We've worked very successfully together 3 times. And we might be working together again soon.
Oh, I hope so.
It's looking good.
I hope so.
I'll know this week if this particular film has come my way. Yeah.
That's great.
All the meetings are done. All the auditioning is done.
Wow.
And they have told
me.
So
Ivan's got something cooking.
Yeah, this is a big film.
Oh,
big film, big part, big star. And
That'll be great.
It would be a feather in my cap. I'm really hoping it happens.
That'd be great. Yeah. I mean, now, I was wondering, Kindergarten Cop, it originally wasn't supposed to be a Stallone movie. Were you around for the... a Schwarzenegger film. It wasn't supposed to be Schwarzenegger.
I didn't know that.
I was reading something yesterday. I don't know if I can find it, but it was originally supposed to... It was offered to... I want to say it was like Bill Murray or something. Yeah. Yeah, I was reading... I'm going to have to look this
movie
up. what was it like working on that film? Because obviously Arnold... You know that film as an Arnold picture.
Yeah.
And what was it like working with the Schwarzenegger?
He was fun.
He was
a funny guy, yeah. He was a funny guy.
Yeah?
When was it? The first or the second day of filming? Early on, he shows up into the makeup trailer, big smile on his face. I shouldn't be saying this. And his makeup man says, Arnold, I've never seen you smiling on the first day of shooting. And he says to the guy, turns to the guy and winks, and he says, my wife polished my helmet last night.
Well, good for Arnold. Wow.
God bless him.
Good for him.
God bless Arnold.
He's a great guy.
Here it is. Kindergarten Cop was originally offered to Bill Murray before the part went to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Wow.
I was correct.
Wow.
Billy Murray. Billy Murray, who was also offered Batman by Tim Burton before it went to Michael Keaton.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of crazy to think what that would have been. So you could have done a Bill Murray movie.
I love Bill Murray. I think he's great.
Yeah?
Great.
We just watched Kingpin the other day, and every couple of years, Bill comes along and just reinvents comedy.
Yeah.
Like, he raises the bar.
Yeah.
And he's just fantastic. And then the Coen brothers with Barton Fink. Like, is there anyone you haven't worked with? Like,
I haven't worked with Marty.
Not yet.
I haven't worked with Francis.
Well,
I want to work with those guys.
Francis has been you may be able to call Francis soon to do a Richard Portnow movie. Because I don't know what Francis is up to anymore.
He's doing
a lot of experimental stuff now.
There are certain directors.
You'd be great in a Marty movie.
Though. I'd love to work with Marty.
That'd be good.
I had an interview for Raging Bull.
Oh, yeah?
It went great. I'm expecting to hear something any day. They like me.
I think that movie's going to be good.
I think it's going to be a great possibility.
But talk about Barton Fink. What was that experience like for you?
That film is... I would say the only film in which I would not change 1 second of my on-screen performance.
Really?
It's the only film that I am totally satisfied with as far as my work in it.
Yeah.
I love doing it, you know.
So those guys brought the best performance out of you, or did they not give you a lot of direction? You just nailed it.
No direction.
So you nailed.
Yeah, I kind of knew where this guy was. As a matter of fact, I was cast in that film before my partner was cast. I was brought into audition, and they said, which part do you want to try out for, Deutsch or Mastronati? And I said, well, fellas, I see these two guys as the same character.
Yeah.
And I've combined them. If you'll let me, I've adjusted a couple of lines, but I can audition now for you with both characters as one. And they said, great, try it. And it worked.
Wow.
So I got the part, and they gave me the part of Duke Mastronati. And then all of the guys coming in for the other part, Deutsch, auditioned opposite me.
Wow, that was great.
You got a set of balls, Richard.
Well,
I got to give you some credit, man. You got a set to walk into a Cohen. I combined the roles. I put them together. You need to go into your audition tonight and be like, I know what you guys want to do. But I came up with something.
I was actually thinking about having him walk down the street with me. I brought in a reader.
You should have Richard. You should have Richard play your agent when you go in there. He'll nail that too.
Oh man, that would be awesome.
But you know, Joel and Ethan haven't put me in a movie since that film. That film won every major award at Cannes Film Festival.
Great film.
Best film, best director, best actor, and. Most of their films, unfortunately for me, are very middle American type films, very rural, rustic type films. So I don't fit into that milieu.
Yeah.
I'm a very urban type of guy.
You're a New York, Chicago, LA type of guy, yeah. But you know what? There's a lot of work in that, too.
A lot of work.
Is there anything that's come out lately that you've really loved? Any films?
Anything that I've seen that I've really loved? No, there have been things that I've seen that I've really hated.
Like what?
I love it.
Oh. John Carter, my God.
Oh,
see, I saw it with Binder. By the way, we're a Detroit-style Coney Dog, 8873 West Sunset Boulevard, and Mike and I went to see John Carter, and he liked it.
He liked it.
Oh, he did.
That's it. I'm not going to work for him now.
I thought I was going to fall asleep.
I walked out after 15 minutes. I thought,
Richard's more brutal than me, Lee. See, Lee just goes, I sleep through everything. If it's no good, you know I don't like it because I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
And then you'll hear me snore and you got to like elbow me. And Richard just walks out. He's like, hey,
well,
I used to sleep.
I used to go to sleep. But now I walk out. I can sleep better someplace else.
You can sleep better at home, yeah.
But that movie cost $250 million.
Can you believe that?
Whoa. And it didn't even win its weekend.
No.
Terrible film. Tonight I'm going to see 21 Jump Street, which they say is fun.
Yeah, I hear that's good.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I love Jonah Hill. I think he's terrific.
He's a good actor.
A really delightful actor.
He's good. I actually thought Channing Tatum was really good in this movie.
You saw the film?
I have. Yeah. I saw it a few weeks ago, and I got to tell you, I have gotten my balls busted for it, but I think he's good in it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
And Ice Cube is really good in it. Ice Cube, but... Go see the movie. I'm interested in hearing what you got
to say.
I'm interested in hearing what Richard said. You know what was great? I want to get to, of course, Sopranos, which is my... I'm going to hit some home runs with that. But Seinfeld. You did an episode of Seinfeld, which I love. That's everyone's favorite show except for a few people. But Bill Murray hated Seinfeld, by the way. Yeah, he says he just didn't get it.
Really?
But he only saw one episode. He only saw the finale. So I don't know if Bill has any leg to stand on there. But Seinfeld. You did Seinfeld. You did the handicap episode. The handicap spot, right?
It's one of their favorite episodes.
What was it like doing that show?
Oh, man. I had a ball doing that show. Because they wrote such wonderful lines for my character. Really just
And that
shameful.
Was early on in the run, right?
I think that was...
First or second season?
94?
Yeah.
I was having dinner in Il Fornaio a year after we did that episode, and Jerry happened to be there that night, and he came over to me and he said, hey, Richard, we got hate mail for that episode. He was thrilled. That was like the best possible thing to happen, to get hate mail for an episode. But they wrote me some really just Shameful lines. A wheelchair like this, you're almost glad to be handicapped.
Oh.
Come on. That's just wrong.
But you love doing the role.
I love doing it. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Oh, that's great. You also, well, let's get into Sopranos, because this is coming around that time. All right. So if people are calling you out for private parts or you know, one of the Reitman films or Barton Fink, they're calling you out for Sopranos, especially back east,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. That's a big deal.
Big deal.
You're Uncle Junior's lawyer.
Uncle Jew's lawyer.
Yeah.
Melvoin.
Yeah, Melvoin. What's the line Junior says? He goes, he's the most expensive guy there is. He's worth every penny.
Worth every penny.
Worth every penny. I love it.
You know, that's how I end my demo reel.
Is that?
With that scene.
Oh, that's
where
great.
He says, how much is that? And I, without batting an eye, I go,
$400,000.
You're worth every penny.
Hey, what was it like working on that show? Especially, you did like 12-some episodes.
I did 15 episodes.
15?
Yeah.
David Chase, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, everyone that's moved on, Terrence Winter, Matthew Weiner. You know, it is a big show.
Yeah,
this show was a huge deal. What was it like working with those guys and working on that show?
Well, I was in New York working on a film when they called me up to come in and try out for the part of Melvoin. The show wasn't on the air yet, and it was one scene. The very first episode that I did was one scene. And at that, for some strange reason, I was kind of had a swelled head. And I said, I don't go in for one scene. He said, they really want to see you. It's recurring. It's going to recur. This character's going to recur. So they're just saying that because they want actors of my stature to come in. No, but it's going to recur. Okay, fine. I'll go in. So I went in and I got the part, and the show became a groundbreaking hit, a piece of television history. I was on it for 5 years.
Yeah.
And by the second season, after the show was recognized as something really special, everybody was laughing all the way to the bank. So being on the set was just joyous. You know, everybody was having a great time. Going out with those guys in New York, it's like going out with the Pope.
Yeah.
You know, I remember we went to Italy for dinner one night, and they wanted to kiss Jimmy's ring. It was like, you know, it's just incredible.
Who's in that audition room when you're doing? Is that a Walken's wife, the cast?
Yes,
you?
Yes, that's
Georgianne
Walken.
Yeah.
God bless her.
Yeah,
yeah, she was there, and David Chase, and
that's great.
There was also David Chase's assistant at the time was a woman that I had worked with on another series that I had done, and the writers are generally in the room. All the other writers.
Yeah. So that was that's a team show.
Yeah,
that wasn't
David
Chase just running the show like Matthew Weiner does with Mad Men, like. Well, I don't think anyone's allowed input over there.
David, you know, he had the last say in everything.
Sure, but he did bring everyone in. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. So you get to, most of your scenes are with Uncle Junior, Dominic Chianese. Yeah, Chianese. And James Gandolfini. Gandolfini, was that just like working with someone totally in the zone, right?
He was there.
He was in the
right
zone,
there.
Man.
But, you know, I was aware of his work before I did The Sopranos, because I thought, man, who is this guy? When I saw True Romance, I thought,
who is this guy?
Yeah,
he's good. Yeah.
I think he's a terrific actor.
He's even good in 8mm, which is not
a great
movie, but he's good.
I asked him about 8mm, because at the end of 8mm, when they've got Nicolas Cage, they finally got him, and he's on the mattress, and they're tying him down, Gandolfini goes through his pockets and takes out, like, $15, crumpled bills. And I said, is that your choice, Jimmy, to, like, go through his pockets and take whatever he had? He said, yeah, you know, I'm a sleazebag. I thought he was great in that film.
He's great.
Good actor.
He is
really,
a really
good
actor
and a good guy.
That's great.
I like Jimmy a lot. I think he's a really good guy.
Do you keep in touch with any of those guys from Sopranos?
I keep in touch with Shirippa.
Yeah. How's Steve doing?
Steve's good.
Yeah.
Steve's good. Steve and I did some work together before The Sopranos. It was on Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And
Terry Gilliam.
That's right.
Who haven't you worked with?
Steve played one of my bouncers, and he didn't have any lines.
And he was a bouncer in Vegas,
no,
right?
No.
Or he was a security guy?
No. He booked the talent
Oh, really?
For the rooms. He booked the acts.
Wow.
And that's what led him to acting.
Right.
Because he thought, you know, I mean, I come in contact with these guys constantly. He told me this subsequently. He said, I'm coming in contact with all these guys, these comics, and I'm just as funny as they are. Yeah, I could do this.
And
he was right, you know. So we kind of had a nice afternoon on the set of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, just chewing the fat. And a year later, there he is on The Sopranos. And we kept our friendship up. Yeah, he's a good guy, good guy.
That's great.
And I knew Paulie Walnuts, Sirico.
Oh, Tony Sirico's the best.
I knew Sirico from years ago. When
you know, he's done some Woody movies too.
He's done some time as well.
Yeah, he will.
Back in the day, you didn't want to mess. They called him Junior Sirico. That's what they knew him
really?
As.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't want to mess with him. Very, very tough guy.
Really?
Very tough guy.
And you guys are still friends too.
Yeah, he knocked Danny Aiello out cold around the corner from the Cafe Central, which was a real hot bar in New York City. Banged him out.
He knocked out Danny Aiello?
Knocked him out.
Why?
Because Danny kept pushing it, kept pointing his finger in Junior's chest, just pushing it. And Junior kept saying, Danny, come on, not for nothing. I don't want to do this. Let's just drink our drinks, eat our food, have a nice time. Finally, Junior said, all right, come on. You want to go? Let's go. They went around the corner. Bang, one shot, out cold.
Oh.
Wow.
Junior is a tough guy.
I'm moving to New York with Portno. I've had it with this L.A. nonsense. No one fights here.
No, they shoot here.
They shoot here.
I keep going.
Oh, man. Well, you know, there's no good Italian food in this town either.
There was terrific Italian pizza for a while.
Where we're at?
It's not there anymore. Albano's on Melrose Avenue, just west of La Brea.
That's close.
Brooklyn Pizza. I don't know why they went under, man. It was great pizza. People talk about Mulberry Street.
I went to Mulberry Street. That's what we said. Okay.
It's okay. Right. But, you know, Brooklyn Pizza is something special, man.
I'll take Mulberry Street over Domino's.
Domino's. That's not even pizza. I don't know what it is.
Mike Finder says it's the best pizza in town.
Domino's?
He ain't fucking around.
I'm starting
around
to
either.
Like Mike less and less. The more I find out about him, the less...
That's
he
right.
likes Domino's pizza.
And he likes
John Carter. What? Come on. If you tell me
he
that
likes
he would,
you, though.
He
so
likes me.
It kind of evens out, right?
God bless. Not for nothing.
I go, I'm having Richard on the show tomorrow. He goes, oh, that's great. That's great. I love Richard. I get so excited. Yeah, you're just kind of like this. Is there any part of you that's Italian?
No.
So So you're just in the culture. You got adopted in.
Yeah, I did.
They love you.
All of my friends, when I in my early 20s, I met a whole bunch of Italian guys, and they became my closest friends, and I became Italian by association.
Yeah.
And then I realized that I wasn't that Italian when I got beaten up to within an inch of my life.
Oh, wow.
I was in a social club, and it was the wrong club to be in because I was with a buddy. We were from the west side. We were in a club on the east side, and they went to work on us.
Oh, and they found out.
Well, no. Things got out of hand. You know, I was four sheets to the wind, man. I was blasted. I was all fucked up.
Yeah.
And so was my friend Frank. We walked in. It seemed like there was nobody there. Nobody there. Next thing I clearly remember was Frankie spitting in somebody's face. And then someone pulling him back by the ponytail. Pulling his head back by the ponytail, and then they came out of the woodwork, and they beat the living daylights out of us, man.
Oh,
I have another clear visual of being in one of those old-fashioned telephone booths with the accordion door, fighting guys so that my sides were flanked. There were guys in front of me, and I was fighting. But we got beaten up very badly, and that's when I realized, I don't know, this tough guy stuff, not really for me. I'll play one on TV, but in real life, there's no return.
Tracy, you need to stick to like West Side Story. Don't go in any actual social clubs or anything.
Gotcha.
But just be an actress. Just if you want to fight Jets and Sharks, don't.
Gotcha.
Hey, you know what? I go to our social club back home in Chicago, and the guys are so old they ain't fighting anyone anymore. It's funny. There's no young Italian guys anymore. Like, it's me and my friends, and, you got these Greeks around everywhere, these Greek guys. They're everywhere.
You got to be careful of them, you know.
The Greeks?
Yeah. You never know.
I know, and you can't even sue them because they don't got any money.
Behind behind that big smile and that lust for life, who knows what lurks in the hearts of those Greeks.
Oh, man. You know what I was going to ask you, too? You did Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai.
Yeah.
That's with Forrest Whitaker. What a great little film. Did you have any idea it was going to turn out to be that kind of independent hit?
No, it was a real big hit, as a matter of fact. I wanted to work with Jarmusch so badly. And I flew in to try out for a different part. I tried out for the part that John Tormey got, the guy that hires Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
And Jim said to me, you know, you're great. I love your work, but you're too young for that part. You're just too young. But I'd like you to be in the movie. Would you do a smaller part? I said, man, I'd do anything for you. Are you kidding me? So I did Handsome Frank. Like the character names.
Tell me about working with Sidney Lumet.
Oh,
Find me guilty.
Sidney.
Find me guilty. It's you. It's Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel is probably
Peter
best
Dinklage.
Work. Peter Dinklage. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really a terrific job. I read Making Movies, Sidney's book.
Yeah.
Before I went.
Great book.
Terrific book. So I read it. And then I reread it on the plane going over. And then, as we're making the movie, I am seeing the book come to life in front of me. And I'm thinking, my goodness, that's page 83 in the book. He's doing what he wrote. It's fascinating. Terrific director. Very confident guy. He'll move on after one take.
Wow.
If his cameraman says, got it, then Sidney will move on. He knows when he's got what he wants.
And he lets you act.
Yeah, he lets you act. You better come with your stuff all ready to go. He rehearses the way you'd rehearse a theater piece. He tapes off the floor, which they do when you rehearse a play. They tape off the floor for entrances.
Yeah, your marks.
And entrances and your marks and walls and furniture. And he rehearses, which they don't do in film. Basically, in a movie, they'll rehearse on the day, at the moment, you know. But he rehearses for at least a week, sometimes 2 weeks before you even get to the set. And then when you're up, you better bring it because he expects you to have it.
Wow.
You know, you've rehearsed it. It's time to deliver it. I like working with him a lot.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, I think he was terrific. He's a wonderful guy.
It's a shame they passed.
Oh, man.
And
his last film was one of his best, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
I agree.
Great film.
I agree.
Great film.
I just re-rented it this week. I'm going to watch it again.
Good movie.
Love it. It's a great movie. You know, I was going to ask you about this movie, Spring Break 83.
Mars Callahan.
Yeah, Mars Callahan did this great little film, Pool Hall Junkies.
I'm in that.
Yeah, which I really enjoyed, and... Yeah, you, Chaz, you know, it's great. Okay. Then he stumbled with this second film, and Spring Break 83 has been going on for, like, years. What's the deal?
Okay.
When are we going to see this released? Goodman's in it, right? John Goodman?
Everybody's in Spring Break 83. Everybody is in it. Mars was in town last week screening the film for companies. I think that Weinstein was there, and... You know, he's looking for the right distributor. The movie's wrapped up. You know, it's finished. It's scored. It's cut.
Yeah.
I'm just looking for the right way to distribute the film.
Okay. Well,
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
I think it will really...
What's Goodman? One of my favorite actors is in it, other than you, is Joey Pants.
Joey Pants.
Yeah, the best. It's the best. Did you get to do any scenes with Joe?
No.
Oh, he's the best, though.
But I did a TV series with Joey called Easy Streets.
Yeah. Well, you did, too. You did, too. Technically, Sopranos as well.
You didn't
have any scenes together.
That's right. In Easy Streets, I did have some work to do with Joey. Yeah.
How was it working with Joe?
He's good. You know, he's nothing fazes Joey.
He's
fazes him.
He's a great actor.
Very relaxed guy.
And Robert Davi's in this movie.
Davi's in it. That's
and he's
right.
great.
Yeah.
He's great. How was it working with Davi? You like working with
I didn't
with
get
him?
To work with him.
No?
Who do you got a scene
with?
I have a scene with the graduating class.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I'm the dean.
Gotcha.
So I'm part of the commencement exercises, and I give a talk to the graduates. So
what do you got coming up, Richard? Are you really excited about, need to promote?
Well, let's see. Recently, I starred in a film, first film that I've ever really carried. Out of 103 pages, I'm on 82 of them.
Wow.
My film, It's called Dirty People.
Okay.
And it's an independent film. Independent films are tricky. Sometimes they never see the light of day. I'm really hoping this one does. I think it's some of my best work. It was written and directed by a guy named Richard Crudo. And I co-star with Casey Green and Pat Asante. And I play a career criminal, real low-end, violent man. I literally take people off at ATMs at my age.
Wow.
It's a violent crime story, and I play a violent criminal.
So it sounds very like 70s, like...
Good for you.
Violin-esque, right? Right?
Straight time.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, I look forward to that. Do you know when it's going to be released?
Well, we're hoping for a release. You never know. With an independent film, you never know whether it's going to get a release. I think what they'd like to do is go the festival route and see if we can get some good ink that way and build up from there.
That's right.
And I've actually got quite a few films in the can, and I'm hoping that... God, I think I've got 6 films in the can.
And you're hoping to get this Ivan Reitman flick.
Yes, I am. There are 2 big jobs on the line right now.
Really?
Yeah, I've met and auditioned for the producers. I've had the callbacks, and now I am waiting. Decisions should be made this week. I'm close to both. I know I'm a contender, a major contender for both jobs. And
that's great.
Man.
I hope you get them.
I hope I get them, too. If I don't get them, God forbid, I'll come back here and I'll trash this fucking place.
Okay.
Forget it.
Okay. I got no problem with that. Just let me know when you're doing it. I won't be around. Yeah, and of course, this place you want to trash, Detroit-style Coney. 8873 West Sunset. Of course, as always, we thank Mike Binder for having us here. And Tracy, got any questions for Richard?
I think
look
that's
at that
it.
Smile.
Look at that smile.
She's so...
She's a beauty.
I'm just learning so much. I'm just sitting and listening. I think I've heard every single thing I could possibly take in this afternoon. I'm going to
really?
Ask you questions when the microphone's
did you get enough
off.
Advice? Oh, she wants that secret advice. She doesn't want everyone having the answers.
It's true.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I could talk to Richard about shit all day, though. Would you come back and do it again? Did
absolutely.
You have fun?
I had a great time. Absolutely. I'd love to come
okay,
back.
Okay, because there's so much more I could talk to you about. I think we cracked the surface.
Yeah, then, you like movies.
I love them. And, you know,
you
someone, you know, I write and I want to act. And it's my passion. It's something I love. I have a lot of respect for it. And I think it's a great art. I really do.
Yeah.
I really
feel the same way.
And, I think anyone, of course, that enjoyed your work knows we'd love to see you back on the big screen. So whatever's coming out,
okay,
we'd love to see it.
All right, I'll keep you posted.
I got to know about this Reitman thing because I'm a huge Reitman fan. I love him.
He's one of the producers. He's not directing.
Yeah.
But
that's great.
I'm close to this one. Man, I want it. I can taste it. I want it.
So this is a big movie.
Big movie. Big movie, big part, big star.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we're looking forward to hearing about
it. All right.
Richard Portnow, thank you so much for
thank
joining
you.
Us.
Thank pleasure, you. Man. Thanks, everybody.
And we will see you guys later this week if Pat ever lets me know who we're interviewing. But whatever, Pat. No, it's cool. It's cool. All right. Thank you very much. www.thematthewaronshow.com. Of course, on iTunes under The Matthew Aaron Show. Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook. You can like it. And don't see any Richard Dreyfuss's movies. That's what we've learned today.
Stay away from Dreyfuss.
Dreyfuss and Ullman.
Tracy Ullman, yeah.
If they ever make a romantic comedy together.
Dreyfuss and Ullman.
Yeah.
Put them in a series. It'll bring the network down.
You know what, Richard? You're not the first, or I'll leave on this. You're not the first, and I'm sure you won't be the last person that told me Dreyfuss was very difficult.
Yeah.
You're not the first.
Yeah.
So I think you're in a crowded boat on that one. Richard, you're the greatest, man.
Thank you, man.
So much for doing this.
Thank you.
I had a great time.
All right.
And thank you to my producer, Caesar, and my producer, Pat Tobias, Caesar Marconi, Pat Tobias, Lee Capreas for helping out today with setting up and taking pictures. My co-host, Tracy Pendergast, who is just amazing, and we're going to have her on again soon. Okay. Yeah, I think that's enough, right? I don't have anything else. No, I never do. All right. Have a good night, people.
That was fun.